Recovery Radio, KMP3, 1000 Oaks. You are listening to the Recovery Radio podcast on KMP3. I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I will be your host. First and foremost, I want to thank you for listening wherever you are. Driving, walking, resting, at work, in the bathroom, curled up in a ball, wherever you may be. I'm glad you're with me right now. You can contact me at sarcasticbigbook@gmail. I read all the emails, and they mean a lot to me. Today, I'm just going to jump right into it. It's exciting. This is part two of My Guest is Dave. Say hello to everybody, Dave.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me back.
Dave's back. Dave gets a lot of fan mail.
Do I really?
No. Okay. I mean, I don't know what a lot is. You do get fan mail. People do write about you and ask about you.
Yeah.
And I can see why. And yeah. So how was your Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving was awesome.
Tell me all about it.
Got up bright and early. I went to the gym for a little while. The gym was surprisingly packed. It closed at noon, so I think everybody was trying to get their workout in. So I went to the gym, and then we went to my wife's parents, and we had, like, all the food you can imagine, all the normal spread and pies and football and cards and family and friends and all of it.
And you
enjoyed a puppy.
What kind of puppy?
I don't know if he looks like a poodle, I think. He's kind of old. She's kind of old. Her name is Apple. She was adorable, though.
That's a cute
a tiny little, yeah. But she was like 14 years old, so not a puppy, but a cute little dog.
Apple, that's a really cute name for an animal.
Yeah.
So you like that kind of thing now, the Thanksgiving, the gathering.
I love it.
And was it always like that for you?
No. No, it was not always like that at all.
Do you remember your first Thanksgiving? Sober?
the first one sober? No. Christina and I got engaged on Thanksgiving, but I was not sober.
Right.
No, I think Thanksgiving was always kind of I just felt out of place and awkward, and I don't know. I mean, I talk about it a lot at meetings that I used to just watch people interact and just be like, I don't know where that comes from, like how they do that. They just seem so relaxed and at ease, and like they really seem to like care about people. They care about each other. I would watch people like interact and be like, oh my God, they seem to be able to love each other in a way that I don't seem to have the capacity to like care about other people the way other people appear to care about each other anyway.
You know? Right.
That's what it looked like to me.
Right. And
so I guess, you know, if I'm going to tell that whole story that, you know, I share about that in meetings a lot, that, you know, I used to just mimic other people because I didn't like have genuine feelings, at least not like powerful ones. I don't know. I would act. I would watch other people and I would just do what they do. And, you know, they hug each other and they say, it's nice to see you. And they pat you on the back, and it's like, okay, so that's, I guess, what you do when you see somebody, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I would do that, like, oh, it's good to see you. And then, you know, it gets awkward. But there was a time when I was probably 6 or 7 months sober, I think, and had gone through the steps to where I'm working 10, 11, and 12, and I'm sitting in a meeting, and Gail, our friend Gail, walks into the room. I'm sitting on the couch, and she walks in, and I just, like, got happy. I was like, oh, my God, Gail's here. Hey, you know? And I get up, and I give her a hug. I said, it's so good to see you, you know? And we chatted for a minute, and then I sat down, and then it just struck me, like, that, you know, people do that because it's genuine. And I, for the first time, felt that. Like, that just came out. It wasn't an act. It wasn't, you know, I didn't have to prepare, like, oh, here she comes. I have to stand up and say, it's good to see you, and give her a hug, you know? It's like, it just happened. And it was like, and I was 40 years old, and I just remember really being fascinated by that. Like, oh my God, this is a completely new experience for me. It's fucking amazing.
Right.
Yeah. I care about people. And I'm not worried. I'm not worried about, like, I look back on my life and it would be like, oh my God, there's Gail. She likes me. I know Gail likes me. I knew that at that point. So Gail, there she is. She likes me. Why does she like me? Because I'm funny, or because I'm, you know, whatever. Like, I have to put on this personality that she likes because, oh my God, now I'm on the spot. Like, there she is. Shit. I have to be that person that she likes, you know?
Yeah.
And try to prepare, and you know, it's just a horrible way to go through life. It really was.
Right.
But to have, I think I might know where this is going. We were talking about this before we started. To have that experience is so profound. I think, you know, from where I came from, and as much as it sucked, the new experience is just that much more sweeter. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I always share that, like, we were talking about the 11-step prayer, so I'm going to let everybody in on this. So we were talking about the 11-step prayer, which is kind of, you know, like, be a light where there's darkness, and kind of like opposites, I guess. And so I share a lot that in order to, like, truly appreciate, for me, in order to truly appreciate a spiritual way of life, I had to go through hell.
Mm-hmm.
It's the spiritual life is just that much sweeter because of, you know, the opposite of it that, mm-hmm. that I had experienced. And so the analogy that I use is that, like, I'm from Nebraska, where it's bitter cold. Like, I think I appreciate being warm more than the person who's grown up in Southern California, and, you know. But if you've ever been, like, outside in, like, 10 below zero weather, and it's just miserably cold, it's just horrible, uncomfortable, and you walk into a room that's 70 degrees, like, oh, my God. It feels so good.
Right.
It's like, it's almost like it was worth the pain to experience that.
Right.
You know, and when we're out here in Southern California and it's like 70 degrees outside and you walk in a house that's 70 degrees, it's like you don't even notice it, you know.
Right.
But I really appreciate it. So, you know, having that that experience with Gail, and I have it, you know, a lot now.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of people that I, like, genuinely care about, but I will never forget the first time that it struck me that, like, oh my God, I'm having this new experience now, and it's amazing.
Hmm. Do you remember the first time Thanksgiving was felt like yesterday's Thanksgiving felt? Like, really good and fulfilling? In sobriety?
I don't. Like I said, I think that there are several moments in my life and in sobriety that I suddenly had a new experience at 40 years of age that, like, I hadn't had this experience before, and I remember them. And then I guess it's just sort of become, you know, my life now that, I guess, you know, it's not these profound moments. I'll never forget these profound moments that I've had, but now it's like, I don't know. I mean, I enjoy life. I love my life. I like being me, and it's been that way for, you know, a pretty long time.
Yeah. What was your favorite thing about yesterday?
I think just being with people that I care about.
I know we both really want to talk about Star Wars.
Yes.
Primarily.
Yes.
But...
Can we talk about religion or politics?
Let's talk about... do you want to talk about the second step?
I'd love to.
Let's talk about the second step.
All right.
What are your thoughts about the second step?
Well, I have a lot of thoughts about the second step. And I've gone through, you know, we talked about this last time I was here, that I'd been in AA, in and out of AA for 20 years prior to that, and had different, you know, different sponsors and different approaches to the steps. And I remember, you know, I was listening to your step one the other day podcast, your last episode, and, you know, you're talking about writing for step one. And I remember one time I was in this group where they did the steps in a certain way, and there was a lot of writing for every step and the first step. And I remember I had like 6 pages in a notebook for my first step back in front. And I met my sponsor at like a Starbucks or whatever, and we spent 2 hours going over my 6 pages back in front on the first step.
Right.
And then he told me I did it wrong. And I was just so defeated, and so like I'd always, most of my life, just thought that, like, there's just some, like, I'm a fairly smart guy, there's just something I need to figure out, you know, life has to have some sort of blueprint, you know. And I always talk about how I would always, you know, perk up when smart people talk, you know. I was always fascinated with smart people and how they're able to figure shit out, you know. And this just ingrained that to me, that like, oh fuck, there was just, you know, I did it wrong. You know, there's a certain way to have this experience, you know, and I fucking did it wrong, and I was just so defeated. So anyway, I remember I had a sponsor one time where...
No, what did you do after that?
Oh, I fucking used, for sure.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
Did you tell him?
Mm-hmm, and I told him. I didn't explain why. I didn't talk to him about, like, how I was so defeated after that, and... Yeah, I don't even know how to describe it. It was just, I was just defeated, I guess.
Yeah.
But I didn't talk to him about that.
Right.
No.
We were talking about that on the last show. Mm-hmm. I was talking about step one, and after the show, I had talked to somebody who had listened to the show and really explained to me that, hi, Mary. Explain to me that...
Shout out to Barry, too. Sorry.
Go ahead. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Barry.
Love Barry.
Yeah. But Mary had explained to me that the writing really helped her achieve complete deflation.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice.
And I know a lot of people that the writing helps. I know a lot of people that it hurts, like...
Yes.
Have this experience you've just described.
Yes.
But anyways, so...
I would say the same thing too, that I have a lot of friends and a lot of people that I really care about that have done steps that way, and I know that it helps a lot of people, but I also think that some people get hurt by it. Yeah. I experienced that. I was one that got hurt out of that.
Right. So you're about to say then you had another sponsor.
So and I think I was actually I stayed with that sponsor. I mean I kept using and I kept, you know, trying. I finally gave up on that approach or that format somewhere in my fourth step.
What were you thinking at that time? So you have a sponsor, tells you to do some writing, you do the writing, you go over it for 2 hours, he tells you that it's wrong, it devastates you, you use, you continue to work with a sponsor. What's going on in your head at that time?
I appreciated him, that he spent 2 hours with me. That to me seemed like dedication, that he's, you know, I mean, I know he's got a family that he would love to be spending time with, but this guy must really care if he spent 2 hours with me and he's still willing to, like, you know, plus I kept using, you know, and, you know, he's still willing to, like, try and help me. That I remember finding that admirable.
Right.
So
Okay. And but then you were going to say something else. You had another sponsor.
No, I think it was actually the same one.
Okay.
So the second step, I don't know, I finally made it through the first step. Okay. Somehow. I did actually get to the four step, and then I was like, at some point during that, I was like, fuck it. Fuck this shit.
You know? Right.
But the second step, I had to write down a concept, my concept of a higher power. And so I think where I was, you know, where we started with this is you asked my opinion on step two.
And your thoughts on step two, yeah.
And I had had kind of an experience that we were talking about earlier, like the opposites. That I had this experience where I had to write down my concept of God, and I fucking had no clue. Like, I had no idea what that would look like. But I did it, you know. I mean, I wrote something down. It didn't mean anything to me. I wrote down what, I don't know, I wrote down some warm and fuzzy shit that I thought sounded good.
Right.
But anyway, my understanding of step two now, I had a pretty incredible experience. It wasn't like really profound in the moment. It was pretty profound. I remember it. It was, you know, almost 10 years ago. But there's a line in chapter four, We Agnostics. There's a couple lines that stuck out to me. Number one, God does not make too hard terms for those who seek him.
Right.
So that allowed me to stop making it complicated.
Right.
Stop thinking that there's something that I need to figure out.
Right.
Because God's not like, God doesn't make this challenging puzzle or, you know, blueprint to be in his presence, you know.
Right.
He doesn't make too hard terms for those who seek him. So that was big for me. And the second thing that still sticks with me today is there's a line that says that deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or other, it's there. And in that moment, I remembered a story about Michelangelo, who made the Statue of David, this incredible piece of art. And the story is that he was interviewed at one time, and during the interview they were like, hey, you know, Michelangelo, explain to us, you know, describe to us how you made the Statue of David. And he said, basically, he said, I got a block of marble and I chipped away at everything that didn't look like David. And so for me, in that moment, I'd been raised in a religion. I don't know. I mean, my understanding of God was that, you know, God was this vengeful, angry, punishing dictator. I don't know. Angry and punishing.
Yeah.
I mean, I for sure remember being, you know, a young teenager, even before that, pretty sure I was going to hell. Like, it had already been set in stone. Like, I'd done something that was,
right,
you know, bad, and I'm already going to hell. So anyway, yeah, I had this idea of this punishing, you know, vengeful God, and I just thought, okay, well, that never really sat right with me, if I'm being honest.
Right.
I never felt like that never made sense to me. It never really sat with my deep down fundamental idea of God, and I'll have to chip away at that. I do have a deep down fundamental idea of God, and it's just a moral compass, like a value system.
Right.
Like, I know when I'm doing something wrong, and I know when I'm doing something right. And so this idea of just like chipping away at stuff that's not God, that doesn't, you know, sit with my deep down fundamental idea of God, got me through to step three, which, you know, we talked about yesterday, which is, you know, this is where they get into clear-cut directions, and most of it is, well, here's what it looks like to not be living in God's will. Here's what it looks like to not turn your will and life over to the care of God.
Right.
And this is all just stuff, you know, chipping away at stuff. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, to be clear, in the big book, in We Agnostics, when it covers step two, mm-hmm. To my understanding, it says, you know, we needed to ask ourselves one question. And do I now believe, or am I willing to believe, that there's a power greater than myself? And as soon as somebody can say yes to either of those,
yeah,
you can get your ass on up to the third step.
Yeah.
According to the big book.
Mm-hmm.
They say, it has been repeatedly proven among us that upon that simple cornerstone, a new and wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. So we're building this this arch through which we're going to pass to freedom.
Yeah.
Free of the desire to drink.
Yeah.
Restored to sanity. Relieved of her alcoholism.
Yes.
And the cornerstone, which I had to look up, is the first stone that you, in construction, it's the first stone, right? Yeah. Everything's built in relation to it, so it's significant for that reason.
Right.
So. And, but the book's really clear on that. The book says, you know, as soon as you're open to the idea that maybe, that's enough. That's it. That's yeah. That's sufficient. And that is how simple it needed to be for me.
Yeah.
And if I had to describe God at that point, I would be describing someone I never met. It would be guesswork.
Right,
and it would be my opinion based on the experiences I had in my life up to that point. But after I got sober, the experiences I had were so different.
Yeah,
and I could have never. It was beyond my own limitations that I would have written down.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Totally. Yeah.
So, but people write about that too. And they write about sober insanity and insanity.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the other thing, that really set me free about the second step. Do you want to talk about that? The insanity?
Yeah. Yeah. I, too, was, you know, really confused about things that I hear in meetings. I think a lot of people are.
Yeah.
I think that...
makes sense.
That line gets blurred when it... I don't want to pick apart in any way that any other approaches to this, but for me, thinking of sober insanity.
Well, before you say anything, let me say, according to the book,
that doesn't exist.
Right?
Yeah, we wouldn't separate it like that. It's kind of like, you know,
according to the book, when they say insanity, when they say restored to sanity, they're talking about a very specific thing.
Yes.
And they're talking about the thought that precedes the first drink.
Picking up the first
drink. It has to do with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with thinking of alcohol or not thinking of it and just picking it up. But it has to do with the first drink.
Yeah.
Well, there's two types of insanity that the book talks about, to my understanding. One of them is permanent insanity, like wet brain. And it talks about that a few times, but way more often and more to the point, because it is in relation to the second step, they talk about the insanity of the first drink. And yep. They say it's gonna be one or more of these three things. One of them is gonna be this thought. Fuck it. I know it's going to be the same, but I don't care. I'm drinking.
People are going to get hurt, and I don't give a shit.
I deserve it.
Yeah, right.
And the authors of the book say, whatever, because of the circumstances, that thought is crazy.
Yeah.
The second thing that might
happen... Whatever the precise definition of the word may be...
That's insane.
Yeah. They're talking about... There's right after that story about Jim that thought he could put whiskey in his milk, and...
Yeah.
They say, you know, whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this... plain insanity.
Yeah.
And I had read somewhere, somebody had described it really, really neatly, that the word whatever means, I don't care. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Whatever means it doesn't matter. So right. If my wife is, you know, leaving the house, she's like, hey, babe, I'm going to go get ice cream. Do you want chocolate or vanilla? And I'm like, whatever. It means I don't give a shit.
Right. Right.
So if we... think of that the way in that line, like,
so that's a 30s so that sense it's a 30s version of saying we don't give a shit.
Yeah.
About the actual definition. Yes. Of insanity.
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
Don't bother looking up the definition or
doesn't matter
whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
We're just going to, like, in this type of thinking, we're just going to use the word insanity.
The second form is, this time it's going to be different.
Yeah.
This time I'll have one, or I'll stop at a certain point. It's this time I'm going to control it. And they say the same thing. Whatever, whatever. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. In light of your circumstances, that's insane. And the third one, scariest one, is no thought at all.
Yeah.
I go to Rite Aid every day for years. No thought of drinking. One day I walk in there. No thought of drinking. Buy booze. 6 o'clock, no thought of drinking. 6:05, I'm drinking. Didn't have a thought of it. That's scary.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's what the second step is talking about.
Being restored to.
Being restored to.
That being solved.
Yeah,
the insanity of picking up the first drink is...
Yeah.
That part gets solved.
Yes.
I remember, this is another one of those profound moments for me, that it hit me. I was reading the 10th step, and I share about this. I was about 4 months sober, but the fact that I was 4 months sober doesn't really have anything to do with it. What's important is that I was at step 10. And I'm reading the step 10, you know, reading that through the book, and it says, this time we've been restored to sanity. We've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. It says, we're rarely interested in liquor. And in that moment, it hit me. It's like, oh my God, that happened. I understood it. I understood it as a concept, and I wanted that to happen. But it had happened. Right. I'm rarely interested in liquor, and I'm 4 months sober, and I'm like I don't even know when that happened. It's weird. The best way I can describe it is, like, at some point I just, you know, forgot to drink. Like, it hadn't occurred to me.
Right.
And when you forget something, you don't realize it at the time that you're forgetting it.
Right.
You don't realize it until at some point later on you're reminded of it. Like, oh my God. So I'm 4 months sober. I'm like, I don't know when it happened, but at some point, it just didn't occur to me to drink. And it hasn't for a while.
Yeah. And that can change.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, toward the end of the 10th step, it's like, you know, this is how we react so long as we, you know, stay in fit spiritual condition. And then it talks about resting on our laurels and when we're in trouble and all that. And yeah, I don't feel like... My job is not to stay sober. I mean, I fail at that job.
Right.
That's not my job. My job is to try to stay spiritually fit, to try and stay connected to God. Actually, you know, when I'm not connected to God, because it does happen, to recognize it and then to use the tools and then to get reconnected to God. My job is to stay spiritually fit.
We're out of time, Dave.
Are we?
Yeah.
Oh, fast.
We're going to have to have you back.
Okay.
Again, for part 3 of Dave.
I love it.
Dave's going to be a recurring guest. So you do actually get a lot of emails.
Good. Okay.
As a matter of fact, there's some pictures I want you to sign.
Okay.
So I can mail them out.
All right. What was you charging for these?
Dave has a really great picture on my phone. It's him at a wax museum sitting with Steven Spielberg, a wax figure of Steven Spielberg, holding a big book, explaining stuff to Steven Spielberg. Clearly they're going over the part about not being the director. And so when he calls, that's the picture that comes up on my phone. And it's very funny.
I love
it's
very funny.
All right. Any final thoughts, Dave?
No, I just, I thank you. I love what you're doing here, and I love that it's helping people, and, you know, again, shout out to Barry. You know, Barry, I'm in your corner. I'm rooting for you, brother. I think it's awesome, and I'm super, you know, honored to be able to be a guest, and love it.
I love it, too. Well, thank you.
Thank
so
you.
I am going to go try to live a life that was worth saving.
You know what? I think I'll do that too.
That's good. I hope you all do the same.
Me too.
Good night.